Two things I'd like to announce. One is that tomorrow evening, we don't usually advertise a shiur, but tomorrow we want to try and get to the people who never come to shiurim. We're having a shiur discussion about the subject of the experience of becoming more involved in the Jewish way of life and the conflicts that arise usually with family. The classical situation is with parents who don't approve necessarily of a younger of a child becoming more fanatical, extremist, whatever the way they think about it. So we'd like to be able to understand. There's also other problems such as a marriage where the one of the couple is developing faster than the other. Many conflicts that arise internally in the person himself, with his family, work, and many different areas, very complex area of what happens when a person gets more involved with all the extremism that he usually generates and the complex relationships that he has with other people. So the reason that we are advertising the shiur widely is the people we want to come are those who are so upset about the whole thing that they don't come to shiurim. So we want those people to come and be able to hear perhaps another side of the picture. And they're asked, also invited to ask questions. They can get things off their chest. We don't have questions usually on a Monday night, but that's what we'd like to try and do. The second thing is that there's a unique effort being made by the South African Jewish community to run a concert in aid of a very specific target in Israel, which is still to be exactly decided. Perhaps people who suffered in the recent rocket attacks, or perhaps people, Russians, who don't have places to live, but the target will be specifically denoted, and tickets will be on sale, I think, afterwards, being advertised soon. We were studying together the laws of tshuva. And we got to the section, who's here for the first time? We were studying in the section, this is a classical area of the Rambam's famous work, in which he goes through from the beginning, the discussion begins with the subject of damage that a person has done to themselves, to friends, relationships, to the spiritual cosmic structure, and how a person can undo the damage that he's done in the past. From there, he leads in right into many concepts that are central to spiritual being, existence. And that's why we chose this section. He discusses the concept of balance of positivity and negativity that you've generated in yourself, what that means in terms of the next world, what's called judgment, what that means. We try to explain it. And we've chosen it because it touches on these very deep subjects. Now, we got to the following point. What we were studying together last time was... You're encouraged, by the way, to see this from the beginning. If you're new or you weren't here from Elul when we began this, this has been well translated in a separate volume on its own. In fact, I think the first chapter alone constitutes one of the volumes. Right? They've translated this section with notes as well, so you can catch up these very, very essential and basic ideas and also give more meaning to the discussions that we're having. The last subject we noted was that there's a very strange and amazing description of how a spiritual accounting is made. We talk about it, as we pointed out last time, in childlike terms of a judgment and being put in some kind of a courtroom in the spiritual world, in the next world. There are advocates who speak for you, adversaries who speak against you, which are your own deeds, in fact. We tried to explain last time, without repeating the whole discussion, that is really a way of saying that you actually come face to face with yourself. Doesn't mean there's no courtroom that they speak about you in. You simply experience the totality of what it is that you're left with after a lifetime. And that happens all the time. It doesn't only happen at the end of a life. It happens in a unique way at the end of a person's life. But it happens all the time. The amazing thing is, and this is a subject we'll get to later in more detail, we didn't emphasize this aspect last week, is that while a person is judged all the time, and the consequences, it's a remarkable thing, there's no way we can understand it. That's an aspect of Emunah, we have to know this. The consequences of where you're holding spiritually become apparent all the time, even though we can't necessarily feel it. Let's try and explain that very briefly before we move on. We know that there's amazing contradiction, but if something's not clear, please ask questions. If I'm able to, I'll answer questions. Try and ask exactly on what's relevant, what we're discussing, issue immediately at hand if it's not clear, or you have something to ask or add. We have the most amazing paradox of the spiritual world. The whole spiritual world works on paradox. Not the paradox between the body and the spirit, the neshama. The whole idea of spirituality is one big paradox. We have to develop that idea again some other time. But one of the deepest paradoxes, aspects of this paradox, is the fact that everything is foretold or foreknown. Hashem knows beforehand what will be, and yet you're free to choose what you want to do. There's no way we can understand that. We can say a lot about it. We can understand a lot of things more than what we do now. And in Hashem, when we get to it, the Rambam discusses it in detail, we'll see in more depth. But one aspect of that paradox is that while a person's free, and they're given rein, they're given rope, right, with which to move and maneuver, and yet, despite that, every action calls into being a consequence which takes effect immediately. We can't understand how that could be and how we could not experience it. The way the Gemara puts it is that a person has in his body, it's a very amazing subject, a person has in his body what are called arvin. Arvin are, the English word would be, I don't really know an accurate English word, I think it's called guarantors, or somebody who stands surety. Collateral, maybe. I don't know. The people who stand surety for whatever it is that you want to do. Which, but in a much deeper sense, it means in halacha you have a kind of person who stands surety where you make a loan, you borrow money, he guarantees to pay it back. But there's a deeper kind of an orev, a guarantor, whatever you call it, in halacha, which is an orev kavlan. That means somebody who so undertakes your debt, that means to be the guarantor of your debt, that the person who lends you the money goes to him first, not to you. You follow? He undertakes your debt, underwrites it to say, do you have anything like that in business? I'm not too familiar with the business world. I don't know if you have that in secular business terms. But in halacha, you have such a thing. You have somebody who guarantees your loan, he stands surety for you, and if you can't pay, he'll pay back. But then you have somebody who undertakes your responsibility in a deeper sense, that when the person comes to claim his money, he doesn't even have to come to you. He can go straight to that person. You follow? So the deepest sense of being responsible for somebody else's, actually it says that that's how we're all responsible for each other. Action. Right? If you think you're getting away with something at somebody else's advantage, somebody else's cost, to your advantage, actually you have undertaken as a Jew to be responsible for him to that extent. So you're actually going against that. You have to understand this also. That happened to us at Sinai. The point is that the Gemara says that we have such a concept that in your body you have one of these guarantors. That Hashem sends you out into the world with an agency that lives within you that guarantees everything that you do. That means that calls you to account according to his accounting. And those are your legs. Those are your legs. Very strange thing. The Gemara says that ragloye debarinish, debarinshi, the legs of a person, inun arvinbe, they are the guarantors that are in him. Which means that your legs walk you in a direction, even though you think you're choosing, your legs walk you in a direction that actually you have to go in. Can't understand that, because actually you are choosing. I'll just give you one example. We did mention it here, I think maybe a year ago. I'll give you the example, just to try and get a feeling for how deep these things go. If you don't understand it, I don't blame you. We're not supposed to understand it. We can't really understand it, but we'll understand a lot more about what we can't understand later when we see the Rambam talk about it. So, right? Which means in one way your problems will get less, but in one way they'll get much worse. Right? But what can you do? No, you can't understand the whole... But nevertheless, you have to know about it. The Gemara says that an example of this phenomenon was an event that happened to King Shlomo, King Solomon. Now the Gemara, we are taught it by him because he was the wisest of all men. If anybody knew how the whole spiritual system worked, it was he. And yet this is what happened to him. The Gemara says that he had one day Shlomo became aware that the Malach HaMavis, you know what that is, the angel of the one who ends a person's life, that Malach was visible to him. He perceived the Malach. So he saw the Malach was going around very downcast. He perceived, whatever this means, you have to understand what this means. Anyway, he saw the Malach was going around very sad. So he said to him, listen, what's bothering you today? So the Malach said to him, you know, it's a strange thing. I've been sent to take two human beings. I've been sent to take the neshamas, right? To take out of the world two people, and I can't get a hold of them. I can't. I'm trying to get them, and I can't get them. And he mentioned the names of who these people were. Very beautiful people. The Gemara says they were friends of Shlomo's. They were his personal friends. He liked them very much. So immediately he had them transported very far away. He had them transported to a certain town. I think it's a town called Lud, if I'm not mistaken. Luz or Lud, I think it's called Lud. He had them transported to a town called Lud. Why? How he did it is a whole mystical, magical thing. But he had them taken immediately, whisked away to this town called Lud. Why? Because it says in the mystical tradition that that's a town where that where death can never strike. No one can ever die there. Special thing that happened in that town, the Malach HaMavet has got no power in that place. If you want to be safe, you go there. So he took his friends, knowing that they were a target of the Malach HaMavet, and he had them deposited right outside the gates of that city, so that they'd be able to be, their lives would be saved. As they got there, they died. As they got there, they died. Right outside the gates, they both died. So the next day, he saw the Malach HaMavet was very happy. So he said to him, why are you so happy? So Malach HaMavet said, you know what happened to me yesterday? Amazing thing. I was sent to get two individuals, two people, and the reason I couldn't get them is that my orders were that I was only allowed to take them outside the gates of Lut. And I couldn't get them there. There's no way I could get them there. And what happened? Suddenly I found him and Shlomo suddenly realized that he had used his choice in the highest way possible to save two people's lives, and that had killed him. That's the way the world works. You make the choices. You make the choices, but the results, not necessary. We'll discuss this in more detail. If you're puzzled, I don't blame you. We'll have to discuss this. But you walk around with legs, that you take your legs where you want them to go, but your legs are sent by Hashem, actually work for Hashem. You think it's directing them where you need to go. Actually, they're his guarantors, and they're checking all the time that debts are being paid. Despite the fact that you get extensions and you can do tshuva and you don't have to pay immediately, but nevertheless, the guarantors walk with you. It's like people think the conventional wisdom is that when you walk through life, it's like walking. Many people say it's like walking through a big supermarket. You take things off the shelves and you enjoy yourself. But there's a checkout counter at the end. At the end, you've got to square up. You've got to make an accounting. You know, they charge you for everything you took. Right now, it's fantastic. It's like, I know, a big holiday, a big supermarket, a holiday resort. Plenty of things you can do over there. You can have fun, you can go on all the rides, there's all kinds of things, but they're keeping a check on you. You've got a fantastic computer over there. And they check up your, they got your number. And when you check out, so you have to pay, you have to settle. That's why, as we've discussed many times, the philosophy of a Jew is to take as little as possible out of the world. Only to take out of the world those things that help you achieve what you're supposed to be doing over here, because that you don't have to pay for. That you get free. That you get free. As we've said many times before, it's exactly as I've often tried to explain, it's the Chofetz Chaim and others, they say it's like a person being sent on a business trip with a big expense account. So the expense account is irrelevant. The company doesn't mind paying the expense account when the person brings home the deals. But if he spends a big expense account and doesn't close the deals, so then he's going to have to pay back the money that he, for all the caviar and the nights at the Hilton, he's going to have to. That's what life is like. And therefore, if you're using anything in the physical world, no matter how pleasurable, no matter how opulent and how lavish, if you're using it for the right reason, you get it free. You get it free. Because if you use it for mitzvah activity or for developing yourself in the correct way, you get it free. I'll give you an example. It says that every word you speak is measured. You have a finite number of words to say. Do you know that? When you're born, you're given a finite number of words. If you exceed that number of words, you've had it. You're only allowed a finite number of words, and that's why you should weigh every word critically. But it does not include words of Torah and mitzvah. If you speak many words to somebody that are words of kindness or helping a person or words of Torah, so then those words are free. But words that you speak for your own, right, your own sake, not when you go out for dinner with friends and you sit around for 3.5 hours talking about absolutely nothing. That's plenty of words about absolutely nothing, but those words you have to pay for. You don't get them free. But when you use them for the right reason, you get them free. That is the conventional idea. But actually, it's deeper than that, which is what we're trying to explain, and that is that it's not that you pay at the end. Actually, while you are moving through the system, there's an accounting being made all the time. You don't always have to pay immediately. You do get extensions, which is what we discussed before, that you can do tshuva. But nevertheless, there's an accounting being made all the time. There are guarantors who are walking with you and making sure that everything works out. Not that you're free to do what you want until the end. It doesn't work that way. It's much more complicated. Now, in the terms of this balancing, which is what we began to discuss, we pointed out a fascinating thing, and the men have to know this. Any wise woman will take note of it also. And that is that if among the mitzvahs that a person omitted to do, or among the transgressions that a person did, there is one unique mitzvah that prejudices a person's chances in the next world in the most amazing way, and that's putting on tefillin. We mentioned that last time. You should remember it very carefully. The Rambam's view is that if a man never put on tefillin, then he has a tremendous, it's a thing that weighs against many, many, it's a very, very amazingly weighty transgression is not to have put on tefillin. The Rambam's opinion is at least once. You shouldn't put on tefillin once, you should put them on every day. In the days of the Gemara, they wore them all day. Right? They wore them all day. We're not capable of doing that. Because to wear tefillin, you have to have a perfectly clean body. Perfectly clean body. not even a faintest suggestion of anything unclean about the body. That's why bar mitzvah boys are not allowed to wear tefillin until about a month before the bar mitzvah, because a young child can't keep himself scrupulously clean. You have to, and not only that, but your thoughts have to be, if you're wearing tefillin, you have to be thinking in Kedusha all the time. I once went to visit my Rebbe, unexpectedly, it was about 10 o'clock in the morning. I came into his house and I found him in shirt sleeves and he had his tefillin on. So I was with one or two other people and we said we wanted to speak to him about something. So he said to us, do you want to speak about something that's in Divrei Kedusha, something that has holiness attached to it, or not? If yes, I'll keep my tefillin on. If not, I'll take them off. So we said, no, it is, and we had the whole discussion while he said it. Some people still do that today. But you have to be confident that you can maintain yourself at a level of punctilious cleanliness and that your thoughts should never wander to anything other than... So that takes tremendous self-control, and that's why we don't wear our tefillin all day. It's bad enough, hard enough for us to put them on for half an hour in the morning or an hour and get it right. And so that's all we do. But there are people who do more than that. Anyone who knows of Scheinberg, anyone who's ever seen him, will notice that he has some unusual features about him. He walks, he wears his tefillin all day. He also wears about 36 pairs of tzitzis. This is not the kind of thing we want to mention tomorrow night for people who are having trouble with Yiddish guys. But he went through some experience in his